following is a remastered version of Triples and Ecstasy, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
We are live. I'd like to welcome everybody. Well, live being an operative word here, but we are live for another episode of Tribbles in Ecstasy. I am your host, Katsu. We have got a bunch. We got the full staff on today. Like, finally, nobody's gone away or whatever doing stuff. So, how are you doing today, Dr. Trekkie?
I'm doing good. Welcome back.
It's good to be back. Skipper, how are you doing today, sir?
I am well and confused at the same time.
So, per usual. Got it. Woody, how you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. G'day, everyone. But I don't know how on earth we could say we're going live, because I don't hear or see anything happening on the live stream.
Did you hit the play button?
It's a C.
It's a C.
There we go.
Yeah, hop. It's an amazing, like, I had that same problem. I'm like, wait a second, I hit the live button, I hit the transmit, why is this not working?
All these buttons we have to press just to
bring a quality product.
Can't we just do it all and just set it all up so just press one big red button?
No,
the red button, please.
No, because Adok is sitting with us at the red button, dutifully not pushing it. Which is good, because he's in a brand new ship, and we're not entirely sure what said new ship will do. But we're going to cover that today. Zadok, how are you doing today, sir?
Katsu, I am doing fine, and thank you for not dying.
Ah, yes. Well, I died, but that's cool. I got back up, and everything was good.
We have high standards here, I guess. Not dying.
Well, it's a matter of making sure you get back up. That's the key thing. But anyway, we've got a number of things to talk about. We've got a number of things going on, a number of things to talk about, so we're going to jump into that. I do want to go ahead and apologize for this week has been kind of, the universe has been trying to kill Katsu. So it's a good thing that I've managed to make it to the radio today, because otherwise, if I didn't make it to the radio, then Xander would have killed me. And, one way or another, I'm not a big fan of death that I can't get back up from. So, so we got a bunch of stuff going on, especially right now. Brandflakes is got the Klingon Rampage event set up. Basically, everybody meets in first hall So this is a KDF event, as evidenced by Klingon Rampage. Everybody meets in the Great Hall in First City and teams up and basically does pickup cues for fleet events, because this also corresponds to the Mark bonus event time period. So I'm of mixed opinions on this, but there's a very selfish reason I'm of mixed opinions on this. On the one hand, I like it because it's community events and I love community events. On the other hand, I hate it because it always happens right as we're about to go live with the show. And I don't, I can't really play along with these community events because I'm usually busy running the show and I don't want to, everybody remembers the Nimbus 3 incident where I tried to both play the game and run my broadcast equipment all at once and the horrific tragedy that befell us then. So, what do y'all think about, community events? I know Zadok was kind of chomping at the bit to go jump in with his other fellow warriors and fight for the Empire.
Well, I wanted to say this. Sharpen your blades.
Outstanding.
I really want to say, do you have to really do it when we're doing our show? But, eh.
Well, I think that... Well, the thing is this. There's two time slots that it's occurring in. One's GMT, and then the second slot, which is the slot we're in right now, is Eastern / Pacific time. So it's trying to catch both East Coast and West Coast at the same time. So I can see it, but like I said, it's inconvenient for me, and so therefore, this is because I get to stand up on my soapbox on this show, then I get to go, why can't I has stuff too? Kind of deal. Or I could just get a better computer and play along with everybody else, but whatever. This is America. People are supposed to, do what I need them to do. No, anyway. Actually, from looking at our show notes and looking at the last couple of dev blogs, we have some, really, really heavy KDF stuff going on.
Yeah.
Did y'all notice that?
Someone noticed.
Zadok noticed. Because I know we've got, we got one of the Tholian ships, and then we've got the Excelsior retrofit, and then we've got the Audi. Because the last time we did a space episode was at the Wolf 359 Memorial, and I was in my Defiant, I think, and you couldn't see me at all. It was ridiculous because everybody else was in these big, huge ships, and so now we're all in big ships, and Woody's in this tiny little ship. And for those of you on the live feed, you can actually see above me this really cool Klingon ship, which was where I was going, because it's Federation character, Federation character, Federation character, and then there's Zadok in the Moog battle cruiser, which we'll be talking about later today.
Zoom in on me, please.
This is as zoomed as I can get at the moment, but beautiful little over the sun or under the sun shot. Just trying to rotate the camera around enough. And it is on a delay, so you're going to start seeing the camera move here in a little bit. But that nose is a little weird, but we'll cover that in a little bit. Right now we've got a little party going on here, apparently. Right? We are, for those of you, I normally announce this right as we start. We are outside of, we are outside of Deep Space Nine, number one. In scenic STO, and that's really cool. That's the one thing I like about this game. There's so many visuals and coolness that occurs in this game. So we've got other things going on. We've got four or five different things all rolling at once. So there's a Bird of Prey giveaway. Is it a giveaway or is it just a limited time ship?
It's a giveaway, but you gotta have it go before the 23rd of December.
Okay, so it's just a matter of going in and grabbing it.
And may I say this?
Yep.
It's only four KDF characters only.
Which is weird, because all this, a lot of this stuff kind of ties around Michael Dorn, and as you know, Michael Dorn, Worf really didn't... I mean, he was all Klingon, 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 but he wasn't every time he went with it, only maybe lasted an episode or two, and then he was like, "Yeah, I'm done hanging out with Klingons now. I'm gonna go back to the Federation."
Yeah, he never seemed happy coming back.
He very rarely seemed happy when he was there.
Like, that's true.
That's I always talk about that. It's like, okay, so Worf was just Klingon. It was too Klingon to be a human, but too human to be Klingon. And it was like every time he'd go there, he'd get this like boisterous warrior culture, and he's the like stoic monk kind of person, right? But then like, and everybody's like, Worf, lighten up. And then they're like, then he goes back to the Federation, and they're like, oh, well, that just must be how Klingons are, right?
Yes, well, you know.
So the Baralth is just going to the sea store, pick it up if you're a KDF character, and congratulations on your Bird of Prey, right?
Right.
Awesome. Big fan. A couple of dev blogs came out. You're dealing with, obviously, Kestrel did a little bit of talking about the process of getting Michael Dorn, and not only doing the, what's the name of that mission? My brain is stuffy today.
The Sphere.
Yeah, the Sphere of Influence, but then going back and kind of putting in the voice and the body on a couple of older episodes, right?
Yeah, they definitely got him in and got everything done that the character Worf has been involved in, so yeah, that's a good thing they've done that.
Did we ever talk about who we would like to see come in next?
We did a little bit, but we're always excited to talk about that.
Probably once, twice. Yep.
I think we need Chris Pine. No kidding. Actually, the sad part is, just kind of going through, have there really been any other, canon characters that have shown up at all?
Well, other than Leonard Nimoy, there's a few, right? Well, I mean, we had a couple of... There was a couple of people that you guys, I think, mentioned I had not encountered yet.
Well, I know there's...
You got Denise Crosby and Michael Dorn, and in the early days, Leonard Nimoy doing the voiceover in the J.J. Trek Spock. What's his name?
Yeah, Zach Quinto, but Zach Quinto's Zach Quinto's not playing... alternate universe Spock, he's playing the EMH. What I'm saying is, like, can you think of any oh yeah, they also have Chase Masterson in as Lita.
Oh yes, yeah.
Which was her role. You know, she was one of the Dabo girls as Lita, who ended up being Rom's wife or whatever. But I can't think of any other canon Trek characters still in motion right now. I mean, obviously it's been quite a while, and most of the characters are dead or old, you know.
It's early stages, from past discussions and hearing how dev discussions on various other podcasts and stuff like that. It's something that they're really, really keen on making happen, is to getting some of the actors from the past Star Treks get involved with it, you know. So yeah, give it time, more voices will come in and whatnot, plus other probably some other actors might come in, because I know some people are pretty keen on getting Felicia Day to come in and do some voiceovers, and
everybody and their brother wants Felicia Day for voiceovers or other stuff. Zadok Dalboy. Like, sadly, as much as I love Felicia Day, like I kind of had to take the pass ever since she cut her hair. It's just not as, I don't know, it's weird. Anyway,
I like girls with short hair.
Gotcha.
I just love Felicia Day. Because hairstyle is, I don't care.
I mean, she's nice and all, but she's done more for the MMO community with the guild than most other people I can think of. Because like, I sat there watching the guild like rabidly transfixed by the guild for its entire run, and I was like, but those are people I know. I am one of those characters. I'm just not going to tell you which one. other stuff that's been going on in the theme of Worf is the design of the Moog battlecruiser. Obviously, the Klingons saw the Avenger cruiser and went, wait a second, we can do better than that. We can do better than that.
I remember the meeting.
Yeah, it's like, wait a second, how dare Starfleet develop a Killy ship? We can develop a ship 20 times more Killy than theirs. And so the result is the Moog battlecruiser, which fills the same kind of role that the Avenger does. To discuss some of the selling points, just some of the selling points. We're not going to go line by line, obviously. But some of the important selling points of both the Moog cruiser and its fleet counterpart. Do we have a Klingon around here that we can talk about, that's willing to talk about the new battlecruiser they get to blow things up with?
Ooh, Horshack.
Well, okay, Zadok. Why don't you tell us about the Moog battlecruiser, kind of just the points that make it jump out at you as a worthy ship for the Empire.
All right. One, it's mid-size to, not small, but mid-size, I'll say. And it is fast for what it does. It has 2,000 crew. The shield modifier is 1. Hull strength is 37,500. Weapons are 5 in front and 3 in back. 3 device slots. And the turn rate is 9. Now, granted, that may be slow for some people, but for the size of ship, it's excellent.
Because people have to remember this is not an escort, it's a cruiser. It's now granted it's a compact little battle cruiser, but it's still a cruiser.
Yes. And okay. I want to say this on the bridge. 1 ensign tactical, 1 lieutenant commander tactical, 1 commander engineering, 1 lieutenant science, and 1 lieutenant universal. Now, people that are not into science, this is a great ship. People that are into science, well, find something else. But now, if I knew this ship, or if I had this ship in the beginning of the game, it would be my best ship. I like it even more than the Vorkastru. I pronounced that wrong. Vorkastru. But anyway, I love this ship. Give it a try.
And it can also equip cannons, right?
Oh, yes. I use the Elite cannons. And, head straight for the enemy. By the time you get there, they're gone.
I'm a big fan of the Avenger with its cannons. Especially since, like, for whatever reason, I've noticed that, like, I don't know if other people have noticed this or not, but and definitely chime in. But, like, my experience with the Chimera is a heavy escort, but the Avengers, a battle cruiser, and I'm noticing that the ships they're putting out now are, even the cruisers are starting to streamline more towards, well, you can fit cannons on them, and you can do these other kind of escorty things, and they've got a little more armor than an escort, but they've got a little worse turn radius. They're kind of, looks like they're developing kind of a hybrid class between the two.
Multi-class?
Well, the problem for the longest time, and everybody will talk about it, G&T will talk about it, and Gates Stone Corps, everybody will talk about it, is the fact that escorts win the game. Like, I hate to put it like that, because I've got a bunch of cruiser people, and there's going to be some cruiser love and some escort hate coming out of the chat channels, but, like, escorts have kind of been the way to go, even for tanks and whatever, but now they're like, oh, no, it's a cruiser. It's totally a cruiser. Never mind the fact that it's got, like, a better cruiser turn radius. It can mount cannons. It can do these other things that really kind of make it sound like a really beefy escort. You know? Is anybody else getting that feel? Or is there maybe a counter opinion to that?
I would say you're 45% correct.
I'm 45 degrees correct.
That's a good percentage, whatever, for you.
Yeah, it's pretty much brings that whole debate, you know, with the squirrel I did with last week's show. You know, just the DPS and everything else and damage that can come out from these, you know, just the cannons alone. And with these gunboats flying around, just melting everything, you know, it does raise the question, you know, why put cannons on a cruiser, you know, if you're going to have that sort of DPS. So,
oh, they're preparing us for a new enemy.
Yeah, probably. It's
Giant squirrels.
At the moment, it seems like we could easily ask whole heap of questions, but at the end of the day, we don't seem to get very much in the way of answers to these questions. You know, they might be aware of it, but how they're going to react to it is a totally different question. And why they keep things close to their chest these days, you just never know until they actually say, all right, this is what I'm going to do now. And next thing you know, you have a whole heap of people whinging and they change it again. So in hindsight, they probably just need to do something and just say, right, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. If you don't log it, well, too bad. You know, they can't just keep changing it because of public view, you know.
Well, what I'm saying is this, like, here's the deal. Have been a lifelong Defiant pilot, right? Like, I love the Defiant class. It's quick, it's agile. The only thing that I wish it would do is the things that we see it do in the movies and the TV shows, wherein it will literally do a 90-degree sidestep, you know what I'm saying? As like an evasive thing, which no other ship in the fleet does that, which is why the Defiant was so tricksy, because it moved in directions that other ships didn't or couldn't. Helped them fight the Borg. Well, which helped them fight the Borg, because the Borg go to lock that tractor beam, and you do that little 90, that little direct to your right sidestep kind of deal, and it's like, oh no, you're being missed. Now I'm moving in more kind of deal. It was that very kind of speed maneuverability look about the ship that kind of made the Defiant stand out. But the thing is, like, so I ran the Defiant all the way through my, like, as soon as I could get them, it was like Defiant, then Apollo class, and then the Defiant retrofit, or the tactical escort retrofit, whatever. And I used that ship up until the Chimera, because the Chimera heavy escort had basically all the same stats except more crew and heavier armor. So the turn rate decrease was negligible. It was almost not even worth considering. So I switched over to that, and I fell in love with the Chimera, and then they released the Avenger, and yeah, I back-talked to the Avenger like crazy until I actually owned it, which is why I've stopped complaining about ships until I actually own them and fly them, or see them flown. You know, then I can kind of get a baseline on whether or not I actually like the ship. But now I got the Avenger, and the only reason I'm not in the Avenger right now is because my Avenger's all, like, black and dark gray with lights. So, like, you wouldn't be able to see it on screen. Or it'd be really hard to pick out on screen. But beyond that, the Avenger is a little lower turn radius, but more armor, more crew, and can fit the same, if not more, number of guns. So it's just that, like, I'm moving into cruisers, but I'll be honest, my Avenger cruiser looks, its loadout looks almost exactly like my Defiant loadout. It's just I've picked up the Alachi cannons, and I've picked up the Voth cannons, and I've picked up the mixed damage type cannons, and it really fights like an escort. So, like, yeah, it's a cruiser, but have you really gotten me into a cruiser, or have you just given me a bigger, beefier escort? That's my food for thought, I guess, you know?
Well, stop complaining, Captain.
I ain't complaining. Things that make me more killy make me happy.
Yes. I want to say two things. One, this ship, the Moog, is also fleet version. Now, this basic version I have, it feels like the Defiant. Now, Federation side, I love the Defiant as well. And it reminds me of that. So, there you go.
I know for a simple fact, because I fly around in a fleet version of a battlecruiser on my KDF character, And it does have a very strong turn rate with it, and you can get the slide happening and stuff like that. So obviously you must be getting that with that particular ship, eh? Is that it?
Yes, but also I want to say the consoles, you know, using the consoles correctly, in the time that you need to use a certain console, evasive maneuvers, that'll give you the 90 degree right away, on at least for sure the Defiant. Now, to get back to the Moog though, you know, using the correct consoles, practicing it, you will see a marked difference. Now, I'm sure many people do that already, but some that don't, I'm just saying.
All right. So you know, there's a regular version and a fleet version of the Moog. Looks like they put out both stats for it in blog 30. So it's definitely worth looking into. Also, this looks like it has the dynamic defense deployment system. So that looks like the same thing as the VADA, the thing where depending on which command aura you've got running, the damage thing, the torpedo does different things. So basically a lot of the stuff, I mean, this really heavily looks like the Klingon version of the Avenger, which is what they've labeled it as. So a lot of the stuff we talked about with the Avenger is going to apply here as well. Do y'all have an idea for what they're going to do for the Romulans? Because you know that the Romulan variant of this isn't far off.
Oh, geez, them again.
I mean, clearly it's going to be a Warbird because, I mean, the design logic that they've gone with is that the Federation gets cruisers, the Klingons get cruisers of prey, and almost everything that the Romulans get are Warbirds in one shape or form. Well, the thing is this, like, the problem is this, the one thing that I have noticed is that Perfect World has gone to an extreme length to avoid the complaint that has come out of the KDF faction for so long. Like, Federation would get content and KDF would get nothing, you know? And so ever since Legacy of Romulus, I mean, there was a ton of Romulan stuff come out, you know, but that was to catch them up to everything else that had been done for the KDF and the Fed. And now, if you notice, it's the Federation will get something, then the KDF will get something, and then the Romulans will get something. And it's really just the exact same ship, just made to look different. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I guess the question that I'm going to see here is, the question that I get here is, apart from the fact that I would kill for a White Star, what do y'all think that the Romulan ship is going to do? Because, I mean, I could see in storyline how the Romulans have started reverse engineering some of this sphere technology, you know?
Thing is, with the Romulans, I know this for a fact, they seem to have the Warbirds as more destroyers and birds of prey style of ships. Then they don't really have anything in the way of cruiser. Then it goes up to sort of like a battleship and dreadnought. So I don't think they're really going to be bringing out any sort of battle cruiser style of ship for the Romulans.
So
I'd be very surprised if they did.
So basically what you're saying is that you're basically seeing it as the Federation have built this ship, the Klingons have built this ship. If you're a Romulan character, then you're probably just going to have to pick up that faction's version.
Waiting for an answer.
Probably won't get any of that particular version at all with the Romulans. That's what I'm pretty much saying.
Maybe next season.
Because, like I said, Romulans don't have any cruisers. They don't have any cruiser ships.
It's they have the Dideritix. They have the big bird of prey.
Well, that's classified as being a dreadnought. That's not a cruiser.
Were you referring to the Scimitar?
Yeah, Scimitar. Those are sort of like more battleships more than cruisers, as far as I understand.
Okay, now the shuttle. They look like the bigger ship, right? The shuttle that they have. So they'll have something similar in looks in the middle.
Well, the reason I say that is because they, when they released the Chimera, the Chimera Heavy Escort, A couple of months later, they released the Klingon version of it, and then they released the and then like about a month later, they released the Romulan version of it. So, like they've displayed the pattern of making sure that no one faction gets quote unquote shorted, you know, and that's why my concern is, you know, that's why my concern would be, what would they be doing with a with a Romulan version? You know what I'm saying?
Well, the Romulans are very well established now, so they should get a ship like that. I see and follow where you're going, but you are the captain.
Yeah. Well, I think the Romulans need to, like, something is going to have to happen, maybe in the next expansion, like whenever they do the Cardassians or whatever, because they need to, whenever they do the Dominion. I think they really need to pull the Romulans away. Like, they need to do their own thing, be their own faction. I know that's tricky, but like I don't really like the Romulans are kind of piggybacking on both factions thing. Like, I don't know, that's just me, but
no, I agree with you. It's been talked about before, you know, have their own faction, three factions.
Just having a quick look here, I jumped onto Stow Wiki. Now, Federations gets cruisers, escorts, and science vessels. Come down here. Klingons get raiders, raptors, battle cruisers, destroyers, support vessels, flight and flight deck couriers, and carriers. And the Romulans get warbirds, warbird battle cruisers, so they do get a battle cruiser, which is the Derridex and Hapax, a science vessel, and a destroyer. That's where I get off the Stow Wiki.
Could they mix escort with a science ship?
I would love to see that. I'd love to see more science vessel love, because it's... The problem with science vessels is that, like, I have a character who's using an Intrepid, you know, the Voyager, you know, but beyond that, like, there's no reason for me to use it even, which is weird because it's got a better turn radius than a cruiser, but it's still got the same kind of armaments. Plus, it's got built-in beam target, you know, like beam target one and all that. So... like, I would see that would actually be... I actually see a point to science vessels. It's just that a lot of my characters don't use them, you know?
Well, that and they're butt ugly.
Apart from the Intrepid. The Romulans are based on technology and surveillance and everything else, and that would be a science vessel.
Yeah, well, like, I could see with a battle cruiser, right? The Romulans have made a big deal about the fact that the sphere is theirs. If you look at Sphere of Influence, when everybody's debating what to do with the Iconian Gate, they're flat out saying, no, this is ours. It's in our space. It's no different than the wormhole. Get away from it. You know, get away. And then, of course, they leave you in command of one of the most powerful carriers in the entire game. But that's a detail. But the
Dyson Sphere itself, the life forms left it, as we found out if you do the reputation.
Yeah.
The Romulans maybe end up being someone else's faction puppets.
Well, but what I'm saying is this. The Romulans here, I mean, like, we know what the Federation and the Klingons have been doing. They've been running around, fighting on the ground and fighting the air and doing stuff. And then, like, the Romulans have been all doing kind of scientific advisory kind of role. I really have this feeling, and I haven't played through all the rep mission yet, so I don't know. And I don't know what all's, you know, I don't know what is planned for with Perfect World. But what I foresee happening is that there's been Romulan teams, and they've been down on the ground, like, reverse engineering technology. Like, what is this? Oh, look, here's a little button. Here's a little box with a button on it. What does it do? Okay, we figured out that this does this. We can use that for something, you know, because that's what the Romulans, I mean, I hate to be racist, but that's what the Romulans are. That's what they do. They're like, hey, we can take this and we can use this for later, tuck it away kind of deal. And I could see them coming out with the cruiser that would fill the same kind of role, but be more of a, okay, this is, you know, we've taken Voth technology, or we've taken Sphere technology, and we've integrated it into our ship. Kind of in the same way that the Republic would be integrating Voth technology in the same way, or Sphere technology, in the same way that the Empire has been integrating Borg technology. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. If you think about the Borg technology the Romulans are already sitting at the vault with.
Yeah, but that's the Empire. That's not the Republic.
That's the Tal Shiar, and Tal Shiar could be part of what's going down right now with the Dyson Sphere. You don't know that yet. I don't know that. But they're still existing, and they're still playing. Also, there is the... what was the Elder Race? That took the Empress?
The Iconians.
Well, they're still in play, aren't they? And there's still no knowledge of what occurred to the race on the Dyson Sphere. They said they left. Why would they all leave?
Ain't the Dyson Sphere part of the Iconians?
I think someone... No, the Sphere Builders worked for the Iconians. If I remember right.
They're one of the other races that supported or worked under them for a period of time. You don't know if they ran away, you don't know if they broke free, you don't know what happened.
Someone introduced them to the Kardashians, that's what happened.
I have input about science.
Absolutely, we love science.
Okay, I think it would come out perfectly to go and follow what you're saying. If we are allowed to use a shuttle to land on a planet, then science will take off. Do you understand what I'm saying? A science ship going to a planet using a science shuttle, go down to a planet to do science.
Like, are you talking about like a submission kind of deal?
Just in game as is, without even a real mission per se. You know, I'm just
away mission.
Away mission, right?
You know, I'd kill to do away missions.
Well, if putting that towards Stone Cryptic and stuff like that, and I say, well, pretty much are with Doff missions.
but there's a big, difference. Doing it. Well, there's a big difference because the thing is, there's an early Fed mission, and I don't remember the name of it because it's been that long ago. There was an early Fed mission where you go down to negotiate a labor dispute on a mining colony. And you have to, like, talk to all the people, figure out what their complaints are, and then, like, report back to the camp director, who would then make the changes necessary to get everybody back to work.
Yeah, you know, remember that.
Yes.
Like,
and
I mean,
use
I
that
to,
in science.
Well, here's my thing. Like, I think the Federation should have more missions like that. I understand there's a war going on. I understand bad stuff is going down. But the thing is, I think there should be more missions like that. I think that the Romulans should have more missions where it's like, hey, let's sort all this out and figure out what's going on. You know, being called back to New Romulus to be like, hey, we got this thing going on. Help us out. You know, these two labor groups are having issues. Or, because I mean, the Klingons aren't going to put up with that crap, but like the Federation and the Romulans definitely will. Likewise, like I could just see more. And I understand the battle zones, because I will never stop them from doing what they did with the Dyson Sphere, because I love the battle zones, I love the battlegrounds. But that being said, I'd really like to see more. I guess less shooty going on.
More story.
More so Star Trek.
It's our,
you know?
It's our perennial issue.
And that would be science.
It's, you notice that? It goes right back to the perennial issue of, can we have more story and more Star Trek, please?
Yep.
Yep. More science. More science, more exploration, more understanding, seeking out new life and new civilizations. I guess maybe I need to spend more time out in the Uncharted sectors, like the clusters. Because like that's where a lot of those missions happen, even though they're just like, be down, go scan 5 artifacts, be much.
I'm getting tired of being beamed around anyway. I'm losing a pinky.
Oh, yeah. See, I would love to see missions that are more like like the diplomacy missions, but I'd like to see better rewards for them. And I'd, even then, I'd like to see those missions. And maybe this ties into the DOF mission, the DOF system. But like at a certain level, I think it's DOF. I think it's dead diplomacy 2. You unlock diplomacy missions that you can get from Jigo Sugihara or whoever, the diplomat guy. And then at like tier 3, you get off on first contact missions. And I love doing the first contact missions. If you've never played them, you should definitely at least play one of them. Because it's like you talk to this alien race and you find out things about their culture, and then you go to the ambassador, you go to their ambassador, and you're like, hey, I think you'd be good for Federation membership, or I think you wouldn't be good for Federation membership, and this is why. And the how successful you are is based on how well you understood what they were telling you, and how well you understand the Federation. Because, like, I failed a mission once because I didn't get that this race would not be a good fit for the Federation. And there's no way, I mean, like, they were too militant or they were too whatever, and like they wouldn't have been a good fit for the Federation, but I got most of the other points right. So I still got some reward, even though I failed the overall mission, because I, you know, I guess fostered understanding between our people or whatever. So like doing that, but like say for science, hey, look, we've got this, you know, this colony down here that's doing this other thing. Can you go run this mission for me? Can you go do this thing for me? Like, I think that tying those kind of missions into more than just the diplomacy duty officer system, I think that would be a really cool thing.
I think I'm thinking a lot about graphics, but wouldn't you really like to be able to take a shuttle down to the planet and land it and then pop out and do your thing?
I think that, though, the thing is, the one time, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but the one time we've done shuttle takeoff and landing is right at the beginning of the Federation storyline, where you do the Vulcan thing.
The fake ambassador.
Yeah, the fake ambassador. And unfortunately, you know, as much as I would love to go from piloting the our ship, get into orbit, and then maybe do like a an atmospheric thing where they fly to this location.
Exactly.
And then move down to the ground. But, because a lot of times we kind of cheat our way, you know, in STO, we kind of cheat our way into, let's just beam down to the surface. I think I kind of get what you're saying. I think it would be cool to do a mission where you go to a location, start your mission, get into orbit. But the problem is at that point you'd be switching from starship to shuttle, then down to ground, and it would be kind of I don't know, that might be mechanically tricky. That would definitely be something to maybe send up, though, because I like the idea of is that Insurrection where they do the shuttlecraft fight with Data?
Yep, and we have to hear that Gilbert and Sullivan rendition.
Oh, come on. A British tar is a soaring soul. Oh,
there we go. Lovely.
Actually, the best part of that entire scene is when Picard tells Worf to sing, and Worf goes, no. Like, it's not happening. Then he does.
Yeah. But, sorry about the car, but the thing I will put it this way, I really enjoy when a new feature episode comes out because it takes a break from doing the grind, the grindiness of the game now.
And, oh, indeed.
Yeah, and
well,
I know for a simple fact because I think Dan Stahl said it in posting or something like that, where they seemed not to go for the big feature episode series because sounds like they seem to want to make a target at that in one weekend. It's paid for when it's obviously it's not. So I think they're pretty much going to be doing things that's going to be making money and paying the bills, basically. So feature episodes is pretty much going to be replaced by most likely the Foundry, basically. So you're going to have to rely on story missions from there.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but the feature episodes already have been replaced. They've been replaced by the reputation system, because like And that had started, it started with the Romulan reputation. Because it's, okay, do the reputation to a certain point. Now you get told, and now you go do the reputation system for a little bit longer, and you get shown a different video after you did this little mission. And then you go and you do another, you grind up to the next tier, and then you get the next part of the story. Like, the problem is, instead of the story being a series of connected missions, it's now grinding to a tier and then getting the next part of the story. So, like, in order to be invested in the thing, you're going to have to grind. And we've debated the grind versus story situation ad nauseum here, you know, because and this goes back to our perennial debate or perennial argument of story versus grind, you know, content versus grind. But yes,
you said and coined a poem. We grind to a tear. And we bleed our blood.
Outstanding. I'm glad I could contribute to the arts in some way. Oh, holy crap. I just looked at our show notes and this is a random aside, or not a random aside. We actually have a Foundry mission. And I was talking to Woody about this. So this is a Foundry mission that I definitely want to promote and pimp based on his review. So let's change gears a little bit and get this done, because we've spent a lot of time talking about other stuff, and I want to make sure we get this Foundry mission mentioned. So, Woody?
Yep, sure. This mission is called Infinite Shift by Intuitive Aptitude. I hope I've said that right. This mission is absolutely brilliant. Now, the waypoints have been fixed. Pretty much, just on the side note, the waypoints have been fixed. It's pretty much, some of the authors might not have caught up with this and might have not know that need to republish the missions. But this one's been republished, which is good. So it's all fixed, ready to go. But this guy has really put some good effort into making this mission. He's just the basic outline story, which also I should mention too, the storyline is based on you playing on your Romulan or Reman character. It's he designed it that you go around being, the story is based around you being on Reman and Romulan character. You probably could play it on your Federation character, but to make it really stand out and work, it's best to play on a Romulan or Reman character, mostly because the simple fact is the storyline is based on you helping out the Federation do some things, and doing some scientific experiment, I believe. But apparently this scientific experiment made you go into an alternate universe, which is have the Terran Empire involved and everything else like that. But where position in time is the Dominion actually found the wormhole. So the Dominion is now present in the Terran Empire, and they've joined up with the Cardassian Klingon Empire, all try to be one big happy family. They accuse you of being a rebel in hindsight, and they take your ship and disperse your crew. So you get to go around and talk to Romulan NPCs, which is officers and crew or crewmen of your ship. So then try to get back into your universe that you come from. This story is very well written out. Dialogue, there's plenty of dialogue to read, plus side storylines, quite a lot of clicking on dialogue boxes to open up the story. Maps,
but it's not, but it's not like a click through, is it?
No, definitely not. It's So they get multiple choice of dialogue. So you, if you go to the alternate question to open up the story, you can click on it to open up the story a bit more, and or you know you can keep, click on the one that keeps the story going forward. So the maps on them are like very well done, especially with the ground maps. He's really made like look like very strong colony towns with nice like sandstone floor, ground and stuff like that to walk on, paving and stuff like that. He spent real good quality time in actually creating this this mission. And put in simple words, this mission eventually in time, and if the author submits it, is definitely going to be a spotlight mission. So it's definitely worth actually getting in and playing it big time. Gets the full amount of the lithium from it, so the full 1440 dilithium from it. So it's definitely worth every single piece of dilithium just playing this mission. So there you have it.
Outstanding. So definitely like a 5 of 5 kind of mission, right?
At the moment, you can play missions. You can get your dilithium rewards, and if you do a spotlight mission, you get the EC from it as well. But just the only thing is you can't leave a review at the moment. The review system is still shut down. Obviously, making sure that's all working with the changes that are made there. So,
but if you could, you'd give it a 5 of 5.
Oh, yeah. I'll definitely give it a 5 of 5.
Outstanding. And that mission is... Oh, my God. I just scrolled past it. That mission is Infinite Shifts by Intuitive_Aptitude. So, or by @Intuitive_Aptitude. So, definitely we'll make sure that goes up onto the notes on the show, and we'll definitely hunt it down. Infinite Shift. So, definitely probably gonna be something I'm gonna play here in a minute too, or at least whenever we're done here. So beyond that, there is actual Trek news. And Dr. Trekkie, would you like to discuss some of said Trek news?
Well, it's a little brief, but it seems that there's now new writers attached to Star Trek 3, which I just realized is Star Trek 13. Perfect for Friday the 13th. Hopefully that is not a bad omen, because these two, and their names are J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, have actually not seen a script turned into a movie yet. So supposedly they're young hotshots in Bad Robot, so there's a lot of interest in having them pursue. And the other big news is that the Orsi Kurtzman partnership seems to not be present in this script. So Kurtzman is not involved in this, and also our friend Damon Lindelof is not involved, which...
But Orsi is good news. Still connected, right?
He is, but it's interesting. This article seems to imply he's supervising the new pair of writers. So I just feel like there's massive distancing between the A-team at Bad Robot and Star Trek in general.
Well, yeah, because the A-team is about to go start talking about lightsabers.
Exactly.
And other stuff.
And that's fine with me. I'm totally fine with it. So it's very interesting. I mean, these new writers that seem a little bit untested. This Blaster article said they've now written a script based on a graphic novel called Boilerplate. I haven't seen that graphic novel before. And the director of Attack the Block, Cornish, is still attached. But there's no official word yet. So interesting. But... I would say this goes beyond rumor. It seems it was reported in Variety, so it wasn't just a blog or some fly-by-night outfit.
True. Well, the thing is, I could see, because they've done two movies, they've established continuity, and even if you have, the problem is you can have all the setting Bible in the world, and new writers want to try and put their own spin on it. So I could see maybe Orsi sitting in a supervisory role, making sure that they don't decide that, you know, Scotty is now going to do tactical work, you know, because, I mean, who would ever take an officer that's iconically in one seat and relocate them to a completely different department for no apparent reason whatsoever? Who would do that, you know?
I would hope they wouldn't need a supervisor to tell them that. But yes, that I'm sure that he's on for those that purpose and others, but it's interesting to see. I mean, there's no track record with these guys, so there's really nothing to judge, and the director being attached to Attack the Block, which, I mean, got some good reviews, so maybe it just once again opens it up to possibilities. I'm not sure where it could go, but at least I think it's good news that a few people are no longer attached, specifically Damon Lindelof, who I've never enjoyed him after the wreck, which was Prometheus. So, I mean, I know he's guilty for other things, but that was the one thing that really, really killed
me. I love that he's guilty for other things.
Of course. I can't say, but I remember he was on the web series that Kevin Smith had, or maybe it was on Hulu, and he was interviewing him, and Damon Lindelof said that Ridley Scott called him. Damon Lindelof was just driving around Hollywood, you know, as the successful producers do. And Ridley Scott called him and just said, "Hey, I have this script for an Aliens prequel, and I want you to look at it." And I just wanted to punch him because he got the script, and this is what he said. He said he read it, and there was in his exact quote, he said, "Well, there was chest hugger or face huggers and chest bursters in the first few pages." And I said, "No, we can't do that. We can't do that in this Aliens prequel. We have to wait for that." And that alone, I wanted to smack him because, yes, I wanted to see that stuff in the first 10 pages of the script. So he dramatically reshaped that movie, and so I blame him a lot for that.
I agree.
No, that's good. Nerd rage is always good.
I know. So I'm glad he's not involved. I'm interested to see what these guys come up with. I mean, we have, I'm pretty sure, a very long wait. They want it to coincide with the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, which would be in, September 2016. So we have a while to go.
Well, that also frees up the bad robot monstrosity to do what they need to do with... you know, with Star Trek, with Star Wars.
So. Yeah, it's very convenient for them. So,
well, I mean, you know, when you're when you basically control the entire science fiction film market, you get to make the decisions on when certain shows come out. You know,
I know, and you guys might have heard. I'm waiting for like another shoe to drop. It's not as science fiction, but so Disney actually acquired the rights to Indiana Jones. Have read this, and there was a rumor that there was some kind of deal worked out with Harrison Ford, that he wanted to be in another Indiana Jones, so he demanded that Disney acquire the rights to future things. And remember, LucasArts, of course, made Indiana Jones as well as Star Wars, so they managed to wrestle it free from Paramount. So I can imagine, why not just give it to JJ? I mean, you know, they give everything else to him. So
Indiana Jones and the Castle of the Mouse.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm waiting for that shoe to drop, but hopefully I just can't. I don't want to see Damon Lindelof's directorial debut, Indiana Jones. I can't see it.
And the Castle of the Mouse. Yeah. Well, my problem is this, and this kind of branches off in a little bit, but like I don't dig putting all of the creativity in the film industry in the genre into one basket, like. That's why, like, I don't care. Like, here's the deal. I don't care if there's a bajillion zombie movies out there, so long as it's, like, four or five houses doing them. You know what I'm saying? Like, that way we've got the Romero zombies. We've got the 28 Days Later zombies. If they ever decide to break down and do a Walking Dead movie, you know, we've got... But it's multiple different streams of writing. You know what I'm saying? Because very few writers, it's been my experience, that very few writers can pull off multiple genres without it just sounding like it's the exact same story with different ray guns, you know? And that's why I've always been concerned about the Star Trek Star Wars thing, is because you know, Trek has now started turning progressively more towards Star Wars, and Star Wars is going to stay Star Wars. So really, it's just depending on what uniform you wear, you know? Like that. And so them acquiring other properties like Indiana Jones and everything else, I mean, it's congratulations for JJ, you know, good for for Bad Robot.
Disney has acquired that, so Nightmare,
you know what's
going to
happen.
Give it to JJ, because he's a genius. And
well, here's the deal. If JJ's making the money, he's not going to turn them away, because the thing is, like, well, I don't know, because Indiana Jones has never really been an ensemble cast. It's been Indy, and then, like, his dame and his little kid sidekick. You know,
wasn't there a young Indiana Jones series?
Yes, yeah, but even then it was young Indiana Jones and his young dame.
Right. And wasn't River Phoenix Indiana Jones, or I thought it was him. Yeah. And then Shia LaBeouf is not going to probably reprise his roles.
As sad as that was, like, they tried to make it, if I remember right, with Crystal Skull, they tried to set it up so that it would spin off a new Indy.
I mean, that was
and
the whole
unfortunately
point.
They picked the and unfortunately, like, I hate to say it, but Shia LaBeouf had kind of worn out his welcome with Transformers, and so when it was like, oh look, another Shia LaBeouf movie, yeah, it was just like, okay, we're done. Thanks. Yeah. You can see yourself out. It's good. Like, this is not that he's a bad actor. It's just that it's just like, really, we're done looking at you now. Like, smart actors never do like six movies at once.
Unless you're Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, but that's different, because he's Samuel L. Jackson.
He likes the money. That's why he is like one of the I think he's always like one or two in the ranking of how much money he's made in a year, because he is in so many guys and everything.
But that's also because Sam Jackson plays it smart.
Like, he does.
He was in Kill Bill, but he was uncredited because he was just a silhouette. You knew it was Sam Jackson because it was his voice, but like, I played with the Coasters, the Drifters, the Ramblers. If they come through Texas, I played with them. Like, that was all he said in the entirety of the movie. But you could tell it was Sam Jackson, and you know he got at least some payment out of that, you know. And then, you know, he's been in other films where he's only gotten one or two things, and then of course in the Incredibles. You know, he's a superhero without his super suit. And so, I mean, that he's smart about his thing. He's not like always throwing himself into.
What about his wonderful soliloquy when he's lecturing and the shark eats him? That's my favorite Samuel Jackson role.
But what I'm saying about being smart is he's very strategic about when he is invested in a film. You know?
He knows how to place himself in the story.
Yeah,
he's the number two actor.
I think he's looking. I mean, he's not as bad as Nicolas Cage. I would never put him in that category. But
let's not.
He seems to definitely take almost any role given to him. That's what I'm sensing.
Yeah, true. I guess. Well, the jury will still be out about that. We'll put that up on the Tim Russ shelf. On the Tuvok shelf. We're a little over. We were all like, man, this is a real thin episode. I don't know that we're going to cover this much ground. And yet we ended up running a little past. Still had some other stuff
never
to talk
say
about,
never.
But man, we will, you know, we got a lot of stuff set up, a lot of good positive stuff set up for next week. So, what we'll do is we want to thank everybody for tuning in. I think we'll call it here, and we will see you back here next week for a very Tribble Christmas part 3. It's our annual Christmas show. We're going to have a bunch of people on. We're going to try and get as many people as we can to flood our studio without crashing our team speak. And we're just going to nerd out and enjoy the holidays in the company of a number of Holosuite Media personalities, a number of other personalities from throughout the Trek podcast sphere, as well as some other people, some other special guests and whatnot. So we invite you all to show up and to spend time with us, to just chat and nerd out have a great old time, and we will, you know, we will definitely see you then and be glad to do so. From the cast of Tribbles to all of you out there, we're saying, eat your veggies. Well, no, don't eat your veggies. Never mind. That was horrible.
Stay Klingon.
Stay Klingon unless you're not Klingon, in which case, whatever you are, be that and be good at it, even if it is piloting a science vessel. So, I just want to thank you all for tuning in and for tolerating my stuffiness and head cold. And we will see you next week. Bye,
we
everybody.
Love you all. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 The following is a remastered version of Tribbles in Ecstasy, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Boldly go where no one has gone before. Star Trek Online.